This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Tennis legend Althea Gibson emerged from the humblest beginnings in South Carolina to break color barriers in American sports. She was born on a cotton farm as the daughter of a sharecropper, and by age 30, she had received the Wimbledon trophy from the Queen of England. In 1956, she became the first African-American to win a major tennis championship, and she would go on to win a second Wimbledon, two U.S. Opens, and one French Open. All this at a time when most country clubs wouldn't allow her to dress in their clubhouses. A new documentary called Althea provides a glimpse into how she did it.
The one thing Althea had was self-confidence in her ability as an athlete. And that came through loud and clear by her mannerisms, her body language, what she said, how she said it. She took no prisoners.
That's another tennis legend, Billie Jean King, from the documentary Althea. It screens at the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival in Durham this Sunday. First filmmaker Rex Miller gives us a preview. Welcome back, Rex. Good to see you.
Great to be here, Frank.
The origins of this project, one simple photo, am I right?
Yes. There was a photo in my childhood bedroom, which was my parents' tennis trophy room. I'm the product of a tennis coach and two tennis fanatics. So there's this one photo that is of two brown-skinned women having just played a match at the Marion Cricket Club outside of Philly. And that, at the time in 1958, was a restricted club where neither of these women could join the club, but they were allowed to participate in the tournament. And one of those was Althea Gibson, and the other was my mother.
And so you come from tennis. You are a tennis family, and you are yourself a kind of a tennis guy.
Self-described tennis geek. Yeah, I still teach and am a weekend warrior when schedule permits.
Though not a pro, certainly not like Althea. By the way, we have that photo that we were just talking about at our website, stateofthings.org. So that got you going on this. You did look into her life and career. Tell us. Let's start with her as a tennis player. I want to go into her biography, but talk about her as a tennis player.
Well, she became world champion 2 years in a row in 57, 58. She started in the play streets of Harlem, playing all kinds of different sports, stickball, baseball, steal the bacon. And that playing in those tough city streets where if you lost, you had to sit out. If you win, you got to stay on. That kind of helped form her winning attitude and her toughness. And she had quite a journey from the play streets of Harlem to playing in country club tournaments and eventually playing in the top tournaments of the world.
Yeah, and it was more than just playing stickball in the streets of Harlem. She had it out with her father more than once. Her friend Lenny Simpson talks about it in your documentary about the lessons she took from her father. Let's listen.
They would go up on the rooftop, and he would have her actually physically fight against him. He held nothing back. Punishing each other. Can you imagine some of the blows that she had to take to prove to her father that she was tough enough? It was just like she was fighting for her life. He knew that if she could one day take him, that she was ready to take care of herself. Playing the game of tennis against an opponent across the net, hitting a fuzzy tennis ball, that was like ice cream and cake.
That's Lenny Simpson, a tennis professional and a good friend of African-American tennis player Althea Gibson. That is from the documentary Althea. Filmmaker Rex Miller is here. Okay, so it's one thing to be tough, and that's a rough story. It's one thing to be athletic and play in the play streets of Harlem, but how did she learn tennis in Harlem?
Well, she played paddleball, which was an abbreviated version of tennis with cutoff rackets, and a band leader who ran the play streets found her, identified her as having amazing athletic talent, and then brought her to the Cosmopolitan Club, which was an African-American tennis club in Harlem that had five clay courts, and people like David Dinkins, who would become mayor of New York, Charlie Rangel, who would become a congressman. Those are the types of people that belong to that club, and they brought her along. They got her lessons. They helped mentor her, and they helped bring her into the bigger tennis world.
So this is an important point. Like the Negro Leagues in baseball at the time, there were tennis clubs for African-Americans, obviously segregated, but African-Americans were playing tennis.
Yeah, the ATA, the American Tennis Association, was the first African-American sports organization founded in 1916, and it still exists today, and it was literally a parallel universe, much like the Negro Leagues of baseball. And that is where Althea got her start in tournaments, and then eventually through various, you know, means and people helping her, she was able to break the color barrier and play in the regular USLTA tournaments.
Well, tell us about those means. How did she break the barrier?
Well, she had a lot of people that helped her along the way. Two very important people were Dr. Hubert Eaton and Dr. R.W. Johnson, who were black doctors in the South. One lived in Wilmington, North Carolina, and the other in Lynchburg, Virginia. And they came to Althea when she was about 17, 18 with a plan and asked her if she wanted to be basically the Jackie Robinson of tennis and break through and play in major tennis championships. And they helped her get her education in Wilmington. She literally went to high school from about 18 to 22 and then went on to college and got a degree at Florida A&M. And they felt that her education, both on and off the court, in school and out, was going to be paramount to her having success in tennis.
So you mentioned Alice Marble. Tell us more about her.
Oh, Alice Marble was a world champion at the time, a little bit before Althea, and very, very prominent in the tennis world and out. And she wrote what's become a famous letter to the USLTA, imploring them to accept Althea into the Forest Hills Tennis Championships.
In your documentary, actually, you have her, a voice actor, read an excerpt, and we can hear that right now.
On my current lecture tour, the question I am most frequently expected to answer is whether Althea Gibson will be permitted to play in the Nationals this year. When I directed the question to a committee member of long standing, his answer was in the negative. Miss Gibson will not be permitted to play. And it will be the reluctant duty of the committee to reject her entry at Forest Hills. I think it's time we faced a few facts. If tennis is a game for ladies and gentlemen, it's also time we acted a little more like gentle people and less like sanctimonious hypocrites. We can accept the evasions, ignore the facts that no one will be honest enough to shoulder the responsibility for Althea Gibson's probable exclusion from the Nationals, or we can face the issue squarely and honestly. It so happens that I tan very heavily in the summer, but I doubt that anyone ever questioned my right to play in the Nationals because of it. It's just as ridiculous to reject Althea Gibson on the same basis, and that's the truth of it.
That's a voice actor from the documentary Althea reading Alice Marble's open letter to the American Lawn Tennis magazine. It did propel Althea Gibson, a black tennis player, into professional tennis in 1950. When you think about baseball, I mean, this is a very public sport. It's played in public stadiums around the world. But you know, there's no more clubbier. I mean, there's golf and then there's tennis. It's clubs. It's controlled by private organizations. They have absolute control over who is and who isn't. Why was there an interest? Well, how deep was the interest in integrating tennis at the time?
Well, one of the forces at play is that even in these private country clubs, they wanted to have the best players there. And Billie Jean King makes that point. So Althea couldn't join these clubs, but they really, especially in the North, they wanted to see the best players. So eventually that unwritten rule of no blacks here got, you know, put down, and she was able to overcome. And then I'll point out that it wasn't professional tennis at that time. It was amateur tennis. And at that point, it was even more controlled by these organizations, the tennis governing bodies, because it was amateur. They controlled who got to play in the tournaments both here and abroad. So Althea, after she became a world champion, had a lot of obstacles just trying to make a living because she couldn't do that from tennis, really.
You couldn't make a living. But she did get in. Eventually, she got in the tournament. There's an incredible moment in this tournament where she's playing. Right?
At Forest Hills.
She's at Forest Hills. She's finally, and this is the first, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the first time that an African-American has played. It's the second round. She is facing a former number one player in the country at the time, Louise Brough. It's all eyes are on this match. And then this happens. Here's Althea telling the story.
I was beating her a set apiece, and the third set, I was leading. And all of a sudden, the clouds open up, the sky got dark as they didn't want me to win this match. And the rains came pouring down. The lightning came immediately and struck the eagle on that corner of the stadium and tumble it down. and they had to postpone the match. I had to sleep on that overnight.
Now, the tennis world wondered, will young, unknown Althea oust the star? All she needed was one game. The pressure was too much for young Althea Gibson. She lost her touch. Miss Bruff took full command. For Althea, it was a heartbreaking experience.
And the next day I came out, I didn't have nothing. I lost all sting and she beat me.
From the documentary Althea, screening Sunday at the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival in Durham, filmmaker Rex Miller is with me. What an extraordinary story.
Yeah, you can't really make that stuff up. People wouldn't believe it unless, you know, I saw it on the front of the New York Times and then in the newsreel footage, and the lightning really did strike this eagle, and this eagle is like 10 feet tall. They're all still there. They replaced the one. There's about 8 of them up there, and so we had a field day filming at Forest Hills Tennis Stadium, you know, reenactment scenes of that.
But a heartbreaking loss. I mean, how did you come back from that?
Yeah. Well, that was 1950, and then she didn't win Forest Hills and Wimbledon until 57 and 58. So she went to college. She tried playing on the circuit by herself with little money, little coaching, and it took that long, 7 years. She finally got a new coach, and she got some support from the State Department, who actually sent her on an overseas tour, which was really kind of a ruse to combat the civil rights images of the day.
Right.
They sent this African-American woman with some other players to go around the Far East and play tournaments, and that experience led her to becoming more of a professional-minded person and eventually reach the top.
As you say, the civil rights struggle in this country had geopolitical consequences, just because they were sort of combating the totalitarian critique of democracy in this country. So that's part of it, and she is part of the civil rights movement. The State Department saw her that way. Other civil rights leaders saw her that way. How did Althea see it?
Althea famously was a reluctant civil rights icon. She did not want to make speeches. She did not want to be seen as this divisive influence. She just wanted to be a competitor. Just let me play, as Billie Jean King likes to point out. She and Arthur Ashe used their tennis very strategically to further their causes, but Althea didn't want that. She just wanted to play. So, you know, she became somewhat of an outcast in that civil rights movement, because she wasn't making speeches. And she said, just let me play.
And despite all of her successes in tennis, she ultimately became an outcast in that world as well, or at least a world that turned its back on her.
Yeah, maybe not outcast, but forgotten. And nowadays, past champions are trotted out every week, every tournament. They play lucrative exhibitions. But she kind of became a recluse. In the film, we like to point out that part of her pain was self-chosen in a sense that she did have this attitude. She didn't like people to tell her what to do. She felt that people were only calling her when they needed something. So she gradually, more and more, she turned her back on the tennis world, and the tennis world turned their back on her as well.
She, what do you think is her legacy as a tennis player?
Her legacy is she's, as Arthur Ashe's wife, Jeannie, likes to point out, she is the first African-American to play at the U.S. Open. Now it's called the U.S. Open, Forest Hills, and to win Wimbledon. And she likes to point that out whenever people, you know, congratulate her that Arthur was the first African-American to win Wimbledon. No, Althea came first. And speaking of her legacy, we're actually working with the USTA, Tennis Association, to try to bring some more recognition to her legacy. And we're hopefully going to have something special at the U.S. Open this year to coincide with our broadcast, which is going to be September 4th on American Masters PBS.
The end of her life was sad, and she certainly was not as well connected or well rewarded ultimately for her achievements. Tell us how she died.
Well, you know, she gradually more and more became a recluse in Newark, New Jersey, and I guess you could say she died of natural causes with perhaps a broken heart, pretty much alone and mostly forgotten.
And not a lot of money. I mean, she had some illnesses that just about drained her bank account, right? She needed friends to come and
Yeah, there's kind of a wonderful story in the film, which I'll make people come and watch it, where she got a little bit of attention towards the end of her life, which may have eased her pain somewhat. But the last few decades of her life, she was pretty much alone. And then she did pass in 2003.
Rex Miller is a filmmaker. His documentary Althea screens at the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival on Sunday. Rex, thank you so much for being here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
You can find out more about Althea Gibson at our website, stateofthings.org. We have that photograph there that got Rex going. Tomorrow we're going to talk about tax incentives for manufacturers, hopes of bringing new jobs. Those are what are often used to bring new jobs to states, but there are other ways to generate jobs and wealth. Worker ownership is one. We'll talk about a conference in Durham that hopes to spawn more worker ownership. You'll hear more about that tomorrow on the State of Things. State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michael. Robin Copley is our technical director. Jess Clark is our intern. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.